KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winter Folk 29 on Saturday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theatre in Portland. Winter Folk is an annual folk music concert benefiting Sisters of the Road. This is Winter Folk's 29th year. Performers include Cozy Sheridan, Tom May, Richard Colombo, and Lori Lynn, and more. Again, that's Winter Folk 29, Saturday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theatre, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Playing is Interstellar Dub by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sounds, and this is Art Focus on KABU Radio. I'm your host, Andre Middleton. Today, my guest is David Walker, and we're going to talk about the Portland Black Film Festival, as well as a little bit about the Cascade African Film Festival. But first, some local art news. Today, I'm going to keep the art news short because I really want to talk to David. I got to be honest. So first up, local photographer Renee Lopez has her first solo show at the Union Knot Gallery at 2726 Northeast MLK. I love this woman's work, and I'm sure you'll be moved by it too. She's been documenting Portland's growing hip-hop scene, our growing resistance to systemic oppression and white supremacy, as well as taking portraits of women of color. The opening of the exhibit is this Friday, February 10th at 6 p.m., and it's up through March 5th. YGB, as always, was off the chain last Saturday night at Holocene. DJ spinning the crowd pleasers, Rashid Jamal ripping the stage with the illest, and dancing. Tap. Yeah, it was an amazing evening. Sarah, you did it again. It was a great evening. Well, if you missed it, there are other YGB events happening throughout the week. Please go visit their Facebook page for all the latest on what's going on. So David Walker is an award-winning comic book writer, author, filmmaker, journalist, and educator. His work in comic books include Shaft, winner of the 2015 Glyph Award for Story of the Year, recognized as a leading scholar on African-American cinema, who's been interviewed by such news outlets as the Los Angeles Times, the New York Daily News, the BBC, and now we can add KABU's Art Focus to the list. We're moving up.
That's up there. No. You've already been up there. Now the BBC's catching up to you.
So let's see. Walker produced one of the definitive documentaries in the topic of black exploitation films, Macked, Hammered, and Slaughtered, and Shafted. His publication, Badass Mofo, became internationally known as the indispensable resource guide to black films of the 70s. And he's co-author of the book Reflections on Black Exploitation, Actors and Directors Speak. David and I go way back, so this interview will be unscripted and off the dome. Welcome to Art Focus, David.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here. It's good to see you. It's been... A couple months.
Well, you just got back home. You've been on the road.
I've been on the road, yeah. Two trips to New York and one to San Francisco in less than a month. So a little wiped out, a little tired.
Well, I'm going to take it easy on you then.
Thank you. I'm
going to take it easy on you.
All right.
So how many years have you been curating the Portland Black Film Festival?
I think this is the fifth year. There was one year that I co-curated it. And by co-curating, I mean I really stood back and let somebody else do a lot of the work. But yeah, I do believe this is year number five. After a while, the years, you know, you hit a point in your life where you just stop kind of keeping track of the years. And
yeah.
It's been a long time.
Oh, it's like, look at that. It's about that time again. So when did you actually start working on this year's?
This year's was, it was probably back in about October, September, October. And Dan Halstead, who is the chief booker at the Hollywood, is also a good friend of mine. You know, I told him, after last year's festival, I said, Dan, I'm not going to be able to do this again. It just takes up too much time and too much energy. And he was like, yeah. Because that's what I say every year. And they tried to get a grant to put on this year's festival. And I came in and did the whole grant spiel with them. And they got the grant. And Dan was like, hey, we got the grant. So you're back on board.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay. And back in September, I'd met a filmmaker who had done a documentary on black players in the National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of got the ball rolling. It was like, okay, we'll show this.
Right. We got to show this film in Portland.
Yeah. And then, to me, it was like, it was an interesting subject matter. And I knew there was some stuff coming up. I didn't know the exact release dates of it. Of them, Moonlight was one I knew was coming up, and I was like, so I reached out to Dan, which is what I do every year, and I go, okay, here's some stuff I know that's coming up, and then sometime within the next 6 months, let's look at what's coming out around February, and knowing that that Portland sometimes has a history of not necessarily getting films that are intended for a black audience, it sometimes gives us an opportunity to get some higher profile films that just wouldn't show up here because we don't have what's considered a quote unquote urban audience. We could get into what that means later, but the closing of the Lloyd Mall Cinema, not that it was ever one for art films, kind of killed it. And as far as Hollywood is concerned, Portland isn't a viable place to show black films. I mean, it's just a gimme, unless it's like a Denzel Washington movie or something like that.
Right. So that brings up a very good point, thinking about how the timing of this film festival maybe can actually bump up us a little bit, because it is during Black History Month.
Yeah.
And hopefully the Hollywood machine says, hey, the brothers and sisters are going to come out for their movies at this time of the year, so let's pack them all in. And obviously, in the past, I think it was a couple of years ago that the Martin Luther King film, Selma, came out about this time of year. So obviously there's some programming there, obviously.
Yeah, that's a lot of that just deals with Hollywood. And when we say Hollywood, we're talking about the an extension of the establishment is, February is our month. As like we get everything in February, the shortest month of the year. Okay.
Been there.
Fine. We take it when we can get it. And I'd love to see that change. February is like also a difficult month in Portland for film festivals because you've got, not only do you have ours, you've got the Portland International Film Festival, which is what the Film Center puts on, but then you have the Cascade Festival of African Film, which is an amazing festival. I don't know this year's lineup, to be 100% honest with you, but like what I've discovered in years of programming, because I was programming festivals before this, there's not that much crossover. Believe it or not, you would think there is, but there isn't. So it is what it is. And I'm just, to me, it's all about showing movies that either I want to watch again or I want to see for the first time. And the only way to even get a copy of it was like either spend a lot of money or convince the Hollywood to book it.
Now, when you say spend a lot of money, what are you talking about? Spend a lot of money? Flying to Atlanta or something?
Fly to another festival or sometimes it's like, films will get picked up for distribution, but it's only for like educational purposes. And so even to rent them costs like $150 to $200 and I'm old school. So I go back to, there's a time when I would spend a lot of money on a movie if I felt I needed it for my own personal library.
Right.
So, like my library is one that is, I wouldn't say is the most comprehensive you're ever going to find. But I would be willing to bet that if you went into 100 people's homes, you would not find 100 people's homes who had a significant collection of black cinema. No one could top me. Sorry, not to brag, but that's just how it is.
Brag. Yo, I'm proud of my Shirley Chisholm documentary. You got that one?
I actually don't have that
Aha!
one.
Aha! You heard it first, folks.
There you go. I have Billy Woodbury's Bless Their Little Hearts, and nobody's got that. So.
Well, that's not fair. That's not fair if nobody else has got it. At least
I think Billy Woodbury's got it.
You had a chance with Shirley Chisholm.
Yeah.
Okay. So just let's talk a little bit about your curatorial process.
Okay.
When I looked at the schedule, I saw some old movies, I saw some in-between movies, and I saw some new movies, and it got me thinking about the evolution of black cinema.
Yep.
You know, to your recollection, what was the first black film that we can point to as saying, that was it, that was the first one?
That's a really difficult question to answer, because so many of the films that were made in the 19-teens and 1920s have been lost,
mm-hmm.
and that history isn't that well recorded. There's a whole lot of short films that went on, some dating back to even before D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation in 1915. One of the first features, I want to say the title, it was like The Fires of Wrath or something like that, and it was by a woman. I'm going to look it up right now, but it was 1923, and Maria P. Williams, I believe, was the filmmaker's name. But unfortunately, there's literally no copies of that movie in existence. It was destroyed. And then Elois Grist and her husband made a movie called Hellbound Train, which I think was 1930. The Flames of Wrath by Maria P. Williams from 1923. It's lost. There's a lot of people who believe that was definitely considered to be the first film by a woman. Noble Johnson, and who was an actor, made a movie called The Realization of the Negro's Ambition,
mm-hmm.
and that was in the early 19-teens, and Oscar Michaud was making movies into, if not the late teens, early 20s. There's a lot of stuff that came out in response to Birth of a Nation, and you kind of have to go through and again, the vast majority of these are gone.
Right.
The vast majority of them,
right.
Or there's only little bits and pieces of them. So you have to sit down and sort of study it. But there was clearly a film movement going on before Birth of a Nation. And when I say Birth of a Nation, I mean the D.W. Griffith movie.
Yes.
That was 1915. And in the wake of that became an explosion of film that was meant to be the counterbalance to that.
Right.
Most of those films were only seen by black folks. Most of them don't exist anymore today. They were filmed with film that was highly combustible, was prone to degradation, and were just lost.
Well, since you mentioned that a lot of those films were, like I said, we don't have a net today, no scheduled questions, but
yeah. But we have some of them at this festival, as a matter of fact.
That's what I was going to say. So when you think about films that are made just for black folk,
mm-hmm.
what are some films through time that resonate with you?
Well, Oscar Michaud's Body and Soul from, I believe, 1925. And I'm bad with dates, but I think it was 1925. It was Paul Robeson's first film. It was a silent movie. That one resonates for sure. And then we're showing like The Sweet Blood of Jesus, which is, I always get confused. I think that's a Spencer Williams film from about 1940. Then we've got Within Our Gates, which is an Oscar Michaud film. I purposefully picked last year, Kino Releasing put together a huge package called Pioneers of African American Cinema. And it was a lot of stuff that had thought
right.
had been lost and had been found and been restored. And this was like a 20-year process of restoring these films. It's a pretty incredible story of how these movies were discovered. They were found in an old movie theater in Texas. And the theater was being remodeled. And in the basement, they found all these canisters of films. And the contractor...
Luckily in a cool, dry, dark place.
But the contractor had started by just throwing them in the dumpster. And then at some point early on, he thought, I wonder what these are. So he contacted a local college, and they were like, "Oh my God!" It was in film terms. It was like finding, you know, the lost Ark of the Covenant, or you know, something like that. And there's an interesting documentary about that. But and it was a white guy who found them, and he says, you know, he thinks about how many films he threw away before he made the decision to ask, and he was like, He helped destroy history, and then he felt this tremendous guilt over it. But that collection, a lot of those, again, the vast majority of them were films that were thought were lost, and so they've been restored and put out on Blu-ray, and last year Kino started putting them out, and I was like, perfect, you know, let's show some of these, and I purposely picked Oscar Michaud and Spencer Williams because they were both very prolific filmmakers and very important filmmakers. You know, some of these movies are, you know, they don't necessarily hold up for, I think, certain types of contemporary audiences, because you look at them and go, what is this?
Right.
You know, it's like, and you have to remember, okay, these are films that are made by black filmmakers to show a lot of times in places like churches and mm-hmm. barns, because black people weren't allowed to go to the movies.
Right.
And you say that, especially to a lot of younger people, and they're like, what do you mean black people weren't allowed to go to the movies? It's like, nope. You know, in the southern parts of the country, they weren't allowed in the movie theaters.
Right. Up here, up north, you had, I remember at the Fox Theater, you had the upstairs section with the straw seats.
Yeah.
I remember that. And that was like, I mean, that I went to that theater in the 80s. And granted, that was like, that was all closed off and that wasn't accessible to the public anymore. But the evidence of it was obviously still there.
Yeah. So, you know, in some theaters in the north and eastern parts of the country, they had a separate section for black folks. And in some parts of the country, they just had separate black theaters, and most of them were owned by black entrepreneurs, sometimes even owned by the black filmmakers as a place to show their movies. So
right.
it's all very fascinating history, and the opportunity to program some of that stuff, get up in front of an audience and explain that context to people who don't understand it. That's part of what this festival is about, because that, you know, when I always refer back to Oscar Michaud. Like, most people don't know who he is, but he really, if you were to make a list of like the top 10, top 25 most important American filmmakers of all time, he's going to be on that list.
Nice.
You know, everyone else is going to go, well, I've never heard of him. But, you know, there's people out there that don't know who Orson Welles is either. So
that brings up an interesting question that I want to ask again. It's an amazing festival, and I know we're going to, at some point, real quick, go over some of the films that you're looking forward to sharing. But do people get to see these films outside of festivals? I mean, you know, is there like a circuit where, you know, I mean, I remember the first time Akira came out, and it was like, you know, I saw it in Portland in like the spring, and then I happened to be able to go see it up in Seattle like 6 months later when the print went up there. How do people get to see these films outside of the milieu of a specific black film festival?
That's a good question, because the, you know, home video's pretty much gone, so it's not like you can go into a video store and rent them. So you look for them maybe on Netflix. A lot of them don't turn up on Netflix. A lot of times you just have to go out and buy them. I have a tendency to buy a lot of stuff that I know I'm never going to see, or that I'll seldom watch, but just to have it so I can have it in a format that no matter what happens, DVD and Blu-ray, I don't foresee a time. It's going to be a long time before those formats go away.
Absolutely.
Like, go the way of VHS.
Right.
So.
But even though I still got my VHS player at home.
So do I. I got mine, you know. Yeah, but, like, yeah. I was on Amazon the other day, and I saw that the first season of Eyes on the Prize was on sale. And I was like, I'm going to buy it. You know, because Eyes on the Prize season 2, it's not available, you know. And you may never be able to get it. And so from my standpoint, part of it's the collector standpoint, but then part of it is this cultural historian standpoint of like, let's have it and then let's try to create environments where people can see it. But a lot of it's about, you know, about really digging around and looking. Like, you'd be amazed at the films you can find if you just really, really set your mind to it. But just most people don't set their minds to it. They're just like, if it's not on YouTube or if it's not on Amazon or if it's not on Netflix, forget about it.
Now, you've inspired me, because I've been looking forward to Sleep with Anger for a little while.
Yeah.
Do you have that?
I don't have that, but it's around there somewhere. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, we've been, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been trying to bring Charles Burnett out. And it was like, well, To Sleep with Anger is the movie that we would show. But then the question becomes, would an audience turn out for Charles Burnett? Because Charles Burnett is arguably the greatest living black filmmaker right now.
Yes.
It's been that way for 40 years.
David, I'm telling you yes, because I would be knocking on everybody's door. Seriously, seriously. I would turn him out.
Yeah.
For that movie to see. I mean, because like, I saw that at the Film Center. You know?
I remember when it came out. 80s.
Easy 25 years ago. And, you know, that was one of the films, a lot like Moonlight today, that had a cadence and a rhythm that was true, that wasn't trying to appeal to a broader audience, that was very honest in its portrayal of just a slice of life.
Yeah.
And it wasn't trying to save the world. It, you know, it's just literally, how do we save this one soul? How do we save this one soul? And I mean, that movie's resonated with me, and you got me thinking, I got to go find it now. Now, yeah. I got to go find it. Thanks a lot.
Well, I'll dig around. I'll see if I can. I mean, I have a bunch of his other movies, because Killer of Sheep, to me, is the pinnacle. It's,
right.
It's, like, in my top 10 greatest movies of all time, and I own it, and I've seen it plenty of times, but there was a time when you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Up until 10 years ago, like, you had to go out there and find a bootleg copy of it, and, you know, a lot of times these movies get lost because something like music rights or something like that.
Right.
And it's a shame. And nobody feels the need to pay the cost of licensing it, or it's cost prohibitive. And that gets into the greed of capitalism and what the entertainment business is about. And when it comes to black films, you know, Eyes on the Prize season 2 is one of those things. They say it's not cost effective to clear all the clips. And so what they're saying is that our history isn't worth the money.
Right.
What I feel about that, I can't actually say on air without the FCC, you know, dinging you guys.
So I got the cuff button right here. I got the cuff button right there.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good. I don't need to say it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the festival itself.
Sure. I mean,
that's why you're here.
Yeah.
Let's do that bit. Where is it happening at?
Happening at the Hollywood Theater. Happens all throughout the month of February. Not every single day, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of stuff going on. I think we've got something like 12 or 13 programs total or something like that. I know it's a lot because I got to go to all of them, and I'm looking at my personal calendar and like going, oh, no
right.
sleep till March.
You got long films, you got
short
films.
Yeah, we've got with the Pioneers of Black Cinema, we're showing Within Our Gates and Sweet Blood of Jesus, and pairing those up with a series of shorts. That was it in terms of shorts this year. Putting together shorts program is always really, really difficult. I didn't have the time. But there's some shorts from the teens and the 20s that people will get to see. So that's sort of the historical context. And sometimes some of that stuff is great because what you're seeing is like some of the greatest entertainers of that era doing whatever it is that they're doing, dancing or singing
right.
or whatever. And that's always amazing.
Right. Has the Pam Grier Night already happened?
Nope. Pam Grier Night happens this weekend.
But it's sold out. It's sold out.
We had to add a second show, and I believe that sold out too. So she was gracious enough. We were doing a program with her at 7 p.m., and then it sold out within a day. And so we kind of went to her and we're like, hey, it's sold out. You're going to be here. Would you be willing to do a matinee program too? And she said, yeah. So she's going to be here on Saturday, and we're showing Coffee, her 1973 film directed by Jack Hill. I don't know if that one's sold out or not yet. People could look, but if it's not, you better get those tickets like right now.
You got me though?
If you need a hookup, I can hook you up.
Yes,
so, but
yes.
Don't anyone else look for a hookup from me. Cause
you didn't hear that on the radio. You
yeah.
didn't hear that. Just me. So next, I got to do a little shout out for the Cascade African
yeah,
Film Festival.
Of course.
The Cascade Festival of African Films is the longest running annual nonprofit, non-commercial, largely volunteer run African film festival in the entire United States of America.
It's amazing.
The festival is free. Did you hear that? It is free, open to the public on a first-come, first-served basis, so you got to get there early because seating is limited. It runs from February 3rd, which means it started last Friday, and it also runs through March 4th. The majority of these films are going to be screened at the PCC Cascade campus, but quite a few of them are interwoven into the Black Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater. Isn't that right, David?
There's stuff that they're showing at the Hollywood, but we're not interwoven. We are actually our own. They're their own separate thing, and they just have an amazing lineup of stuff. I tell people all the time, I think it is the best film festival not only the state has to offer, but that this region has to offer. And, you know, it was there that there's a Senegalese filmmaker, he's passed away years ago, but Ousmane Sembene, who's sort of the godfather of African cinema. That's where I discovered his work. And I got to see films by Haile Gerima and other amazing African filmmakers from the continent of Africa. So I'm always like just sort of ecstatic about what that they have to offer. And it kind of bums me out that we sometimes go head to head with them in terms of programming. But again, my belief in what I've seen, of course, it's only anecdotal, is that There's not a lot of crossover between those two audiences, and then you throw in the PIFF audience, and it's like, it's Portland is a strange city in terms of how they go to the movies, especially when it comes to film festival releases.
And so it's also the time of year too. Yeah, yeah. After all the snow and weather, people are like, you know, I'm down for sitting in a movie theater. One thing I want to say about the Cascade African Film Festival, in addition to that, is that PCC is dedicated to buying a lot of the films and having those films in an archive that's on site, and it's free to check out. You know,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah, they have everything. It's like, it's amazing, and because African films, they don't play anywhere. You know, that's the thing. There's not that many festivals in the U.S. that are dedicated to them. There aren't any video stores anymore.
Right.
So, and going out there, they're not on Netflix.
Nope.
So I've seen some amazing stuff there over the years, and every year there's always an incredible lineup. So I can't speak highly enough of that program, of that festival, that is, and I think it's always amazing.
Yeah, it really, really is. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. Since you actually only got about 3 minutes left, because I had to get a little breath. David, tell me, if you don't mind sharing with our audience, what are you most looking forward to in this year's festival of seeing, especially in a communal environment? What are you looking for most to seeing?
That's a really tough one. I mean, that Pam Grier event with coffee is going to be amazing. There's a documentary about James Baldwin called "I Am Not Your Negro," which I'm dying to watch that with an audience. There's the Maya Angelou doc, which the title escapes me at the moment. That's what we open Thursday with. That's an amazing movie. I want to see that with an audience. But honestly, I think maybe in terms of just feeling good, and that's what a lot of people need right now, is we're showing the 1987 concert film Sign of the Times, Prince, Sign of the Times. And I think that might be the single thing that will just really... Like, sometimes you just need to have your soul reinvigorated.
Right.
And few people can do that like Prince could do. And that concert film, which was just amazing for those of us that saw it back in the day. That's it. And that was, you know, part of that is honoring the legacy of Prince, who we lost last year. But it's also sort of a reminder that, like, even though he's gone, not only is his music still here, but it's an opportunity for other people to stand upon his shoulders and make great art.
Right. Well, David, once again, thank you so much for joining us in today's Art Focus. It's always a pleasure having you. Not just as a friend, but I get to have you as a guest as well.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. Oh, never mind. So sorry about a little technical difficulties. Well, as always, you can find photos, links, as well as all the guest information on our show page. Please find KBOO Art Focus on iTunes. We've got a podcast going on there. Please give us a rating and some feedback. Audience feedback is always welcome. If you missed any part of today's show, there will be a podcast of this show online at some point today. Don't forget to check out local photographer Renee Lopez at her first solo show at the Union Night Gallery at 2726 Northeast MLK this Friday at 6 p.m. And check out YGB Portland on Facebook to see what other events they have lined up for y'all this week. As always, it's my goal to meet and introduce listeners of KBOO to a broad spectrum of regional artists. If you're a visual artist in any medium, or a musician, you know, whatever, I'd love to have you or your organization on my show. It's also a goal to share information relevant to artists as well. When I learn of residencies, grant deadlines, call for artists, you'll hear about it on this show as well as our KBOO Facebook page. We're going out to the sounds of Higher Plane by Danny Skrilla from Portland's own Zam Zam Sounds. Thanks again for joining us on Art Focus here on KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon. Peace.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance. And your bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change, but recognizing KABU along with your family and friends is your legacy. Giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KABU to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your consideration of that future gift. Please contact Becky Myers at 503-231-8032 or email development@kboo.org to notify us of your plans. Please give it consideration. KABU listeners, we appreciate those of you who are members. For those of you who are not, please consider going to kboo.fm and looking at the donate button at the top and hitting that. Up next at 12 o'clock is Buscando America, coming up right after these announcements.
KABU at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, The Brainwashing of My Dad, will play Saturday, February 11th at 7:30 p.m. In The Brainwashing of My Dad, Jen Senko tries to understand the transformation of her father from a non-political, lifelong Democrat to an angry right-wing fanatic